Somewhere across the bifrost, way up high.
Welcome back to Wakes Up from the Bifrost. My name's Sun Tzu, and joining me, Pat Dunford from across the pond. And today, we've got a fun pod. Pod's coming a little bit late. We had some scheduling hiccups. Normally, we record a week ahead of time. We're recording this one kind of live when we give it out to you. And we're going to be covering mini extravaganza. But first, let me check in with my co-host, Pat. How you doing?
I am doing great, TT. My hype is just in overdrive following mini extravaganza. What a cool show. We had so many fantastic panels and tons of really exciting spoilers for what's coming up for the game.
Yeah, for sure. AMG knows how to throw a party. And, you know, I do think we'll stick with our normal cadence. I think we'll start with Sleeve It or Heave It. But before we dive into that, this segment is so much more important because, right, groundbreaking, we're given 10 tactics cards per roster now instead of 8, which is huge.
Yeah, we don't know exactly when that change is coming up, but we were told maybe before the end of the year. So it could be we're going to be sleeving up some extra cards. And you're right, it's a big change, because if you're still using 5 cards on the table, you have a lot of extra wiggle room for cards that are maybe marginal, that previously we might have said when we were talking about them in episodes, well, I like this card, but I can't justify it making my 8. Well, maybe not, but can it make your 10? Right? You can take some interesting choices.
I definitely think you can take more of those situational cards, where every once in a while, this card could be incredible, but there's just a lot of matchups where it's not, and I need to just, like, make sure I have a good 5. I really think it opens up some of those fringe things, and I'm really excited about this change for that reason. I don't think anyone... There was some contentious thing said during the mini-stravaganza, right? Mm-hmm. Like, is Sam Wilson the best Captain America? Other things like that. But I don't think anyone disagreed with us moving to 10 tactics. I think that was widely accepted as a great quality of life change.
Oh yeah, I think it's really cool. It makes characters that bring their own unique tactics card a little bit more appealing, right? I know some people see that as a glass half full and others see it half empty, right? Some say it's cool to have your own tactics card and the option to bring it. Others say, well, I like this character, but I can't take them because I don't have room for their tactics cards. Well, now maybe you do. And it'd be interesting to see what people do with affiliated cards as well. We've just got Convocation coming out on the horizon and they have so many cards. This is going to be a great option for them.
And we can fit them all. We talked about that in an episode, but now we can actually fit them. Actually, oh man, I think due to time traveling, that episode isn't live yet. Sorry.
Blame the mini extravaganza.
Sorry, yeah. But today in Sleeve It or Heave It, we're going to be covering an interesting card. We're going to cover Ricochet Blast. Ricochet Blast is an unaffiliated active card, range 4, 7 dice, energy attack. If it's Iron Man's activation and he's within 4 of an ally Captain America, can they each spend 2 to play this? 4 power is kind of a lot. While within 4 of Captain America, Iron Man may use Ricochet Blast attack shown. Range and line of sight are measured from Captain America instead of Iron Man when making the attack. Iron Man may reroll any number of attack dice during this attack. Well, okay. It's actually a really, for a 4 power spender, this would be really, really good. Takes a tactics card, but hey, I got 10 of them now, man. Sky's the limit.
Well, that's not the only limit on this card, right? Because you also need to be including both Iron Man and Captain America.
But one of the things spoiled at Mini Extravaganza was we have another Iron Man coming in the future. So we have 2 Iron Men, we have 2 Captain Americas. We still only have 1 Ricochet Blast. But what do we think of Ricochet Blast now as the world has kind of changed dramatically since this came out in the corset?
Yeah, so it's a good card. I think this is another one of those cards that I used a ton when I was playing games focused around the core set, right? And I remember in our early days of playing and podcasting, we'd have our 10 characters and we'd be thinking, okay, there's a new character out. Do they bump out anyone from the core set? And as a result, Iron Man got played with Captain America a lot. And I took this card quite frequently and it was solid. Like, 7 dice reroll all is good. The fact you also have the interesting range option on it, where in theory you can have Iron Man extend a very long way via Captain America and reach out and touch someone he wouldn't otherwise be able to. It's quite cool.
Yeah, the reroll all is just a good quality of life thing, right? We've talked about it so many times. Can we mitigate our dice in some way, right? And I believe Friday AI still works with this from the original Iron Man, right? You can still add the 2 additional dice to this attack that you happen to be sitting on the five power, right? Yes, yeah, so that gets it up to a nine dice energy attack. So I like Ricochet Blast. I think it's more interesting with Sam and his leadership ability. You can do some funny movement things to get angles on this you previously wouldn't be able to. And I think it's worth noting, and we'll cover it a little bit later, but the Steve Rogers did get a bit of a glam up, right?
Yeah, so one of the things previewed in Extravaganza was Steve Rogers is having his card revamped and he's being spiced up, especially in regards to his shield throw, which is notable, right? Because shield throw is his range 4 range attack. So if you're more often planning to keep Steve at range and being a long range fighter, then Ricochet might be more applicable. One of the challenges I found with Ricochet Blast is keeping Iron Man in the same vicinity as Captain America was sometimes a bit of a challenge, not always, but if he has more flexibility for where he's standing because he can be operating at range 4, that's going to make the cards online more often.
Yeah, so I think it's an interesting card to explore, right? Steve Rogers, again, we talk about it a little bit more. He could be used as more of a range character now, which is really interesting to me. More of like a midline brawler is kind of how I see him fitting in. We have Sam, who brings all sorts of out of activation movement shenanigans, which is interesting for kind of pulling this off. And we do have another Iron Man in the future. So Ricochet Blast is just a card that, you know, it probably still doesn't make our 10. You know, it's a great demo card. I love it when I'm demoing the game. But it's a great character-based card that I think deserves a second look as we kind of expand the number of tactics we get and as new characters are filtered into the game.
Well, yeah, we also saw in Extravaganza another card that Corsair Iron Man can use in Helios Laser. And that is both a boon and a burden for Ricochet Blast, because on one hand, if you're playing, say, Corsair Iron Man, you get to use both, and that's a compelling reason to take him. But do you have room for both? And do you really want to be tying two cards to a single character?
Yeah, and I mean, let's just be clear. Helios Laser smacks if you're willing to put power into the thing.
Bear in mind, Ricochet Blast is not weak, and actually it's way more cost-effective than Helios Laser. Like, 7 dice reroll all is probably about the same output as if you pumped about 8 to 9 power into Helios Laser and got like a 10-11 dice attack.
I mean, 7 dice reroll all, right? You're anticipating three-ish misses. You reroll that and you get 1.5 more successes off of it, theoretically, right?
Yeah. It's
I'm thinking it being worth about
3 or 4 more dice. So therefore, it's worth about 10 or 11 dice. If you see what I mean, your 7 dice.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying. It's equivalent to like a 10 dice attack is kind of what you're saying.
Yeah.
10 or 11 dice attack, yeah. I mean, we can talk about Helios Laser Bombardment. Range 5, 2 dice, and you get additional die for every point of power spent to play this, and a whole bunch of people can play, any amount of ally characters can spend power to play this. So, at the high end, all you're going to hear about is 32 dice Helios Laser attacks. Don't get me wrong, really, really cool, also incredibly inefficient, right? We don't want to overkill characters that much. There are some affiliations that can generate a lot of power, and it is really interesting to me to see that power being directly changed into an attack. I actually really like Helios Laser Bombardment as far as team tactics cards, attack cards go. I think it's a pretty incredible one.
Yeah, it's very spicy. That's definitely a card I'm going to be sleeving. As for Ricochet Blast, jury's out for me. I think I like it more than you, though. I would be happy to take it whenever I have a roster that plans to use both Iron Man and Captain America, like, as my default core, you know what I mean? When you have a roster, you tend to have your leader and a couple of affiliated characters you're always going to play. And if my roster has those two characters, I'm going to sleeve it. Right now, that means I'm heaving it, let's be honest. I'm not playing those characters together, but that definitely could change in the future.
Yeah, I think the other thing worth noting is, correct, we would only be able to use, if we took this with Hulkbuster, we'd only be able to use it after ejection. So it's worth noting that there's some timing restrictions on this that are a little funny.
The jury's out on that one. I think it's something we'll have to pay close attention to on the rules forum, because the weird wording of that Iron Man, right, where he's called Iron Man brackets Hulkbuster. Is that Iron Man or not? What do the brackets mean? So we'll have to wait and see.
And I know we normally don't get responses like that until a little bit later in the process there. So Negaludar, I'm sure, will set us straight there and we'll circle back. So it sounds like we're still heaving Ricochet Blast, but we're excited to kind of revisit cards of that ilk, especially with the expanded team tactics slots.
Yeah, and don't get me wrong. If if the Corset characters get a revamp, I mean, this is a powerful card. And if you're playing Iron Man, you're playing Captain America in every roster, I think I would take this in my 10.
I think that's a great point. If you're planning on playing Iron Man Avengers, it's a good card. But yeah, Iron Man is kind of... yeah, he's just kind of been, for me, replaced in a lot of different ways by other characters, right? Mm-hmm. All right, so the next thing up is a crisis change. Pat, what has changed in our crisis? Are our ACSs worthless?
Thankfully not. If anything, our ACS series is even more important because you're going to be playing a wider variety of crises. So they've announced that coming soon, the way that we select crises is going to change. And instead of the current system where you get roll priority, priority player picks one, the other player gets the other kind, and then you discard one at random, and from your remaining two, you pick one. Scrap all that and just priority player picks a type, picks one of their three at random, and then the other player does the same with the remaining kind of crisis. It's simpler to explain, at least.
It is simpler to explain. I'm not the biggest fan of this. I'm just going to be out front about it. I enjoyed the crisis selection. I think there's a little bit of skill there, and I think it lets you take things like meteors where I don't want to play meteors every time, but there will be games when I want to get meteors out there. How do you feel about the crisis change, Pat?
I have a lot of thoughts on this. How deep do you want to go? It's a complicated topic.
We're 10 minutes into the podcast. We like to shoot for about 45 minutes, so I'll tell you when to stop if you start talking.
Okay, so I have several thoughts on this. One, I've seen a lot of people say, okay, how do I want to explain this? Look, here's what I want to say. I think this can be, in theory, a bigger deal than it might be in practice, because I think a lot of people like to think about crises as being four specific matchups, right? You say, oh, I'm going to take a flip crisis like Spider Portals to if I'm going to play against Criminal Syndicate. I'm going to take Demons Downtown against Web Warriors. Should I mean I'm going to take a fast crisis like Spider Infected against a slow team? I'm going to take a slow crisis like Wakandan Herbs against a fast team. Right, all of this stuff is true, and it's the kind of thing that content creators like us have dined out on, created episodes on, right? And it does matter, but I think people are massively overstating how important it really is. And you get kind of this reduction where you just assume, you take for granted, okay, the kind of crisis I'm playing matters. Therefore, having less choice is bad, and I can't engineer the crisis I want for the matchup I'm playing, right? And that is a bad thing. But I don't know if I think it's just so overblown. I think basically you can make a roster for pretty much any affiliation that's good on pretty much any crisis. And for me, that is the main thing that this change is promoting. It's saying, look, you cannot do your plan A, plan B, plan C roster creation. You just have to have a team that can play any crisis fine. And I think basically any affiliation can play any crisis fine.
Two things that I'm going to hit on, kind of a weird tangential point first, and that is players like to feel smart. And I'm not saying that in a backhanded way. I like to feel intelligent too, right? Mm-hmm. I'm aware that most of the time I'm an idiot, but sometimes I like to feel smart. And it's the old, you played Magic, right, Pat? I think you play Arena,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right? Blue mages love to scrap. Opt, right? Scry one, that you look at the card, you pick whether it goes on the top or the bottom, then you draw a card. They feel like it gives them a lot of advocacy in what's coming up, right?
Yeah,
but in reality,
agency.
If you didn't have that card, you would just have the top card in the deck, right? It's not, but it gives you the illusion of this like deep decision point. And don't get me wrong, we can get into Opt. I understand Opt's a good card. I've won a PTQ. I'm pretty good at Magic. Don't get at me, people. But people like to feel smart. So removing a choice from people inherently just feels bad, right? Now, I understand I'm being extreme, but I think you at least understand where I'm going with this.
Yes.
I do agree with you that any affiliation can build a roster that is playable on all the crises. Where I disagree is that, well, actually, I don't even know if we disagree because we haven't covered this point. I don't think every roster can play on all the crises. And I worry about homogenization, both in roster building within affiliations and within Crisis selection out there? Are we still going to see as many of the cool Crisis? By cool, I mean less often played. I get excited when I see Meteors. I hate it, but I think it's cool when a team brings Meteors to the board. And part of me, and this is an irrational fear that has that will eventually be right, either reinforced or dissuaded as we get more data. Does it homogenize these things together, or does it make things a little more broader? Because I do love how broad the game of MCP is, and I would hate to see some of that go away. Where I'm excited about team tactics bringing more uniqueness and creativity to rosters, a part of me fears that the Crisis change will homogenize things. I've said that word a lot. I won't say it again. I'm sorry.
It's okay. Yeah, I know where you're coming from. I think it's kind of early to say.
100% agree, it is an early irrational fear. Let me be clear on that.
Yeah, I mean, I think if I were to guess why you think it's going to homogenize things, is it because the safe option in terms of, if you know that, okay, you're getting random crisis, you can't afford to have a crisis in your three that is something that you only wanted extreme situations, but sometimes is not going to be very good for you, right? So you can't be like, well, I don't want to play Demons Downtown. It's not good for me. But it's even worse for Web Warriors. And I screw those Web Warriors. I'm going to put it in my roster so that if I come against them, I'm going to put it down regardless, right? You can't have that kind of crisis anymore. Because one of the three times that you're picking Securers, you'll get it and be like, oh, this is bad for me. So you need to have all of your crisis be good for you.
Not even good for you, but just okay for you, right?
Yeah.
You just can't, you can't feel like you're disadvantaged in them, right? The old right. Jacob asked, right, what makes you better on hammers? And that's just an interesting take on these things, right?
Yes. I think the answer is going to be, it's going to change, right? It's not going to be, are you the best on this crisis? It's going to be, are all the crises fine for you? Then I think the homogeneity will come from whether or not there are enough different team archetypes who have different answers to this question. And I think there probably are. When I think about the variety of crises in the game, you've got kind of, on the secure side, you've got slow secures versus fast secures, plus the extra choice of flip secures. On the extract side, you've got slow extracts, fast extracts, and the choice of single extracts, right? That's quite a lot of variety, and you'll probably find that you'll have teams that, in general, decide they want one of those things and take as many of those things as possible. But as long as different teams value different things, then there would still be that variety.
Yeah, like I said, it'll be an interesting change. I don't like to overreact to things at first, right? So I am curious how this plays out in the long run. Like I said, I don't love it. I think threat value is something that I personally derived a lot of enjoyment from that minigame there. I like looking at your roster, figuring out what you theoretically could play at threats A and B, figuring how that kind of interacted with the crisis I selected. And to me, we've lost a little bit of depth off the top of the game. I don't feel like the old crisis selection method added a lot of overhead to the game. I don't think it was overly time-consuming or things like that. And I personally like the depth it brought. I'm curious if this does speed up the game dramatically. Obviously that could be fine. And I am curious, right, does it mean we see more stuff or does it mean we see less? And time will kind of suss that out for us.
For sure. I think we shouldn't really continue on this topic without first mentioning one of the key reasons why AMG have done this, right, that they talked about on the stream, which we haven't touched on yet, which was specifically to limit rosters built around abusing specific crisis combinations, right? We've talked in the past about Panic Grips, the notorious restricted crisis, right? And that crisis was restricted specifically because some teams, especially Asgard, could abuse it with very specific characters at the threat level of the crisis, right? So if you had priority, you had a 2/3 chance of getting this crisis. You've got priorities, so you're picking the threat level. The threat level enables your plan to work, and then it's very hard to stop your plan. And that is the best example we have of this. But, I mean, in playing games recently, I've seen people try and do similar things on Legacy Virus, for example. I've had Avengers teams blow me out 4-1 on Spider Infected with a turn one plan that was pretty impressive. And I think the idea really here is... when your crisis is completely random, that's going to happen less often. And the opportunity cost of constructing your roster specifically to do that thing is going to be higher. So we should see less abuse. What do you think about that?
I agree with you, and that's why I worry that things will be homogenized. I'm sorry, I said I wasn't going to say that word again. I think we'll see less of the 4-1 Avengers Spider rosters and more of the this Avengers roster has to be ever good on every one of these things. So I'm just taking solid value characters for my selections. And I'm speaking in extreme terms. Pagani's going to yell at me, I'm sure. But that's kind of my fear there. I liked those niche teams. I loved when the internet was going crazy with Deadly Virus rosters. I thought they were cool to see these like weird Rube Goldberg things. I remember the first time GD Nerd showed me, it was way back when Defenders came out, this weird, janky, turn one Mystic Wakandan herb, which we're going to talk about in the after the credit scenes, with Defenders portals and Hela, and you needed all these different character interactions. I thought that kind of stuff was really cool. I like it when people engineer these weird ways to approach different strategies. And I'm just afraid that we'll see just a little bit less of that.
So I think we will see less, but I think it's a delicate balance because, of course, the problem is that stuff is cool to think about and talk about, but when it is worth playing, it's actually not fun to play.
We saw with Panic Grips, right?
Right.
Because it is a fine line.
Yeah, it's a really fine line because the problem is it's like a fun puzzle to solve, but the solved puzzle results in I get a massive advantage and there's nothing you can do about it. And then that game is not fun.
And here's my counterpoint to that, Pat, and then I'm happy not to talk about this anymore. If I know that you have a plan for Spider Infected, right, I have a choice in the crisis that I put out there to try to make that as difficult as possible. And that choice now is gone, and that's what I'm missing.
That's what I'm worried about. I don't know. So Spider Infected maybe isn't the best example, but if we go back to the classic Panic Grips example, right? Mm-hmm. Yes, if you have a secure in your roster like Gamma Wave, you have a slightly better chance against that Asgard team playing Panic Grips. But they are still advantaged. And then the question becomes, would you rather give them a two-third chance to get what they want and you have a two-third chance to bring them down a peg, or live in a world where you're both doing it random and they only have a one-third chance of getting what they want? And you have a one-third chance of them bringing them down a peg beyond that if they do get it. And I think it kind of shakes out at least the same, but from your point of view, as the defensive player, I think it works out at about the same. But for the player actually abusing the crisis, they're much less strongly incentivized to do it in the first place.
It's less likely, obviously, as a defensive player, because maybe I only want Gamma if they're selecting Panic, let's say, right? Because you have these... Mark uses the term silver bullet crisis, and I don't love that term, but at least it kind of expresses the thought, right? I'm taking a quote-unquote counter crisis. You got the internet can't see I made air quotes there, and Pat made a funny face. And again, time will suss this out. I just like that choice, that advocacy. We talked about it with the op choice. We talked about it like players like feel like they're making a decision there. Again, if you only have one-third of a chance to do something whether that's abusive or just highly focused, whatever word you want to do with it, are you going to see less of them? And my fear is that we will. And again, I think we've both kind of set our points here. Again, time will suss the thing out. We'll see what happens. The game continues to get wider, continues to get more diverse. I just will miss this part of the thing as well. Now, I guess the good thing about it is AMG seemed very open to things, right? Mm-hmm. Who knows? We may revisit this again in the future. I don't want to speculate on it. But it's not like this is written in stone. Right, mm-hmm. We've obviously, they're changing a core rule already. I think that they've done a good job listening to the community. And I think it's important to remember, too, that for all these competitive players out there, we are, relatively speaking, very small subset of the MCP world. Right, yeah. For as great a number as the doctor, who's a real doctor, comes out and puts it on for the TTS events, right? If that was all of AMG's customers, this company would not be in business, right? We're a very small subset of a very large community.
Yeah, absolutely. Obviously we have to trust AMG to make the changes that they think are going to be best for everyone and best for the health of the game. I've got no doubt that they're doing it for that reason. And like you said, we can wait and see what the impact is.
And I do agree with you there. I do think that this is a better experience for the casual plays once a month tabletop player. I guess, truth be told, I'm close to plays once a month now with the moving and everything else. I do think it's a better experience for that player, even if we kind of lose some stuff at the top end. And maybe that's just better for the game all around.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, look, metas are always going to exist. Strategy is always going to exist. If the rules change, it just changes how you formulate that stuff, right? And I think some people are upset about the immediate loss of, oh, the old way of thinking doesn't apply, so that strategy is gone. Sure, but other things will take its place.
Yeah, but honestly, it's kind of hard to be down after Mini Extravaganza because we got 10 tactics cards, right? You know, and if I have to sacrifice Crisis Selection for 10 tactics cards, I'll probably still do it. And we've got some other core rules. There's one we need to touch on first, and that is the change to gems. And then we'll jump into kind of the revamp characters. Pat, do you want to take us through the gem changes that they outlined?
Yeah, so pretty simple one, but pretty impactful. They've explained that gems now no longer take a slot in your roster, which is fantastic news for anyone who was struggling to build teams that also wanted gems. But the downside, or the price you pay for this, is instead you assign the gem to your character at roster building, and they have to take exactly that gem loadout and no other. So, for example, in the past, you could have a roster that said, I have Thanos, I have the power gem, I have the mind gem. And then you could take Thanos with any number of those gems. You could have a 6th threat Thanos, a 7th threat Thanos, or an 8th threat Thanos in this example. Now, at your roster, you say, I take Thanos with the mind gem, for example. You always have 7th threat Thanos. You can't go without the gem. You can't add any more gems later on. What do you think, TT?
It's a big change. My old Black Order rosters just don't function. And okay, when I say mine, it's not like I was an innovative Black Order roster here. Like, I stole Morgan Evans' list and I made a couple changes. Like, it's the same list. Oh, I do mean Morgan. Sorry, Morgan Evans is a pickleball player. I've been playing a lot of pickleball lately. I think it's a big hit to them. I do think they will recover and come up with another thing. I also think it makes really weird interactions for defenders, personally. That's the one that seems really weird to me. You've played more defenders games than me. I still played them a lot. There were definitely games where I'm like, well, Strange can't afford the gem this round, right? And I just think you have to make a couple roster concessions there to make sure, like, do you always want Strange to be that expensive?
Yeah, it's tough. When I was playing defenders with good success in the last TTS league, my plan at 15 and a threat in particular was to have Strange without the gem. And then at 16 threat, it was a choice. And above 16 threat, I almost always took the gem. But yeah, it was definitely, it mattered, right? The gem was a character in my roster that I would sometimes take. And you losing that flexibility is a blow. Of course, what you get instead is an extra character. And that also really matters. It was really hard to fit in all the characters I wanted. So I guess it would just mean I would have to change my plan, right? If I decide that I want Gem Strange, which I do for portals and other nonsense and defenders, then my 15 threat plan has to change, right? And maybe I can fit in another 2 threat character. Maybe I add in Wong, right, to stay affiliated at 15 threat with the gem. Yeah, I don't love it either, TT. I can see the face you're making. Or maybe I just have to change that 15 threat plan, but at least I've got another roster slot to do it.
Yeah, I here's what I'll say. I've seen a lot of negativity about this. I just think it's going to be different. The rosters won't survive, but the affiliations will still be playable. It'll just look different. I think we might see a lot more dual affiliation Black Order, which is something the Black Order had a really, really hard time doing. And we can be oppressive, pick your threat value Thanos, 5 value Corvus in threats A, B, and C. And the other ones, we're going to play Wakanda, right? Or we're going to do something else. We're going to Web Warriors or something. I'm just throwing names out there. Yeah. And I think you could argue the same for Defenders. They don't have as much room freed up because they only get that one gem slot, but they do have some really powerful characters with good crossovers. We covered that in Valkyrie and Hawkeye, just to name two off the top of my head. So I just think it just pivots, right? What are you going to do at 14th threat with Defenders? Well, maybe I'm going to play another affiliation.
Yeah, maybe I'm going to throw in my last spot is going to be like Captain America, Sam Wilson, and I'm going to add Hawkeye, Iron Fist, and Luke Cage that are already in my roster, and boom, I'm playing Avengers there. I think you're right. I think Black Order definitely is the most impacted. It changes them the most. We don't yet know if it changes them, like how it shakes out. It's just a big change. You get to use more characters. That's great, but you can't customize your characters. That's a shame, right? That was a cool thing that they got to do that other people didn't. One thing that I think is interesting is it makes the Black Order characters much more splashable outside of their own affiliation, right? We've talked in the past about how Corvus Glaive with Proxima is superb, but the extra reality gem slot is a high price to pay in your roster for unaffiliated characters. Now you don't have to pay that reality gem slot. You can also play like a 9 threat Thanos for a single slot in your roster if you want to go big, which is pretty cool, right?
Yeah, we could. We should make like a thick person roster later on for an ACS because you could. We just like all the expensive threat characters and then work through what we do at different. Let's do that in an ACS or maybe an episode.
I mean, obviously, you go. Okay, so we're gonna have like
it's gonna be a 9 Thanos. We're gonna have Dormammu, yeah. Right?
Dormammu. Yep. I think you dual affiliate Avengers, so you can have Hulkbuster with his leadership and Hulk, plus Thor, Scarlet Witch, all Avengers. Yeah. She-Hulk, Avenger.
And then do we just fill out the roster with rogue agents at the end?
Or do you add stupid characters that have more gems? Like, do you go like Space Gem Loki, Mind Gem Maw, Time Gem Strange?
Oh, can we play Ebony Maw? This is definitely worth an episode. We'll do an episode on this.
That'll be cool. All right.
So again, I think the gem changes. A lot of people feel it's negative. I just feel like it's just going to be different. That's all it's going to be. It's just going to take some of the established rosters and shake them up, and we'll see what comes out of it. This to me is a fine change, and I am excited about the splash ability. Like you said, I think that's actually really, really cool, especially for Thanos. Right, instead of 3 roster slots, he's only going to take 1 now.
Cool. And people were already experimenting with Thanos in Avengers with Captain America. Hey, another chance to mention revamp Captain America, and in Spider Foes. And I think he'll be more popular in those rosters now that you don't have to give up so many slots to get him.
Yeah, and what a phenomenal segue we have there. So a bunch of different characters got spoiled. They're getting basically revamped cards. There's some changes, rebalancing, right? With MODOK, Shuri, Captain America, and Hulk were the ones that we saw. And let's just go ahead and talk about Cap, right? I think the big thing with Cap is he's always been kind of power-starved. And what they did is they took his shield throw and they made it a flat builder. And I just think that's incredible.
It's a simple change, but it makes such a big difference, doesn't it? Because you have this core problem because Captain America, like his gimmick is he's tough. He wants to stand on points and he is a bodyguard. He wants to be near his friends. And you had this difficult tension where because his range 2 strike is building power, he couldn't always be at the point of the table he needed to be while also generating power, right? But now with his shield throw, that problem is solved. You have way more flexibility about where you stand. So you can protect your buddies, you can sit on those secures or run away with those extracts and still be relevant in the game.
Yeah, so I mean, there were a couple other changes to Cap's card as well, right? Shield throw went from a 4-dice attack to a 5-dice attack. It's obviously phenomenal.
Very nice.
Shield slam went from slamming size 2 characters to size 3, which is just a good quality of life change. I think those are the only ones. I'm doing this off the top of my head.
Yeah, that was the push. The push from his strike pushed size 3 as well.
Thank you. Yep, that changed as well. So just good quality of life things. And like Pat said, right, Cap's biggest issue before is he starts the game with 1 power. He moves up, he interacts with something, he's got 0 power. Next round, he gets 1. Unless he's in strike range, he has no power. Him just being able to shield throw, get the second point of power, so he opens up bodyguard or vibranium, is just huge. So I really love the change to Steve. I've been having Steve in my Sam Wilson roster anyway, just because I'm a diehard, I'm a real fan there. I just think this is a phenomenal quality of life change for good old Steve Rogers.
I tell you what, I'm really excited to be using 2 Captain Americas together in the same Avengers roster. It's going to be so cool. And it's going to be really good because they both have excellent leaderships and they're now shaping up to be both be really excellent characters. And you're going to have legitimate choice about which ones you run as your leader and you're going to be happy to have them both on the field either way.
Yeah, so let's stick with Avengers. Is there anything else you want to cover on Cap? I think Cap just really good quality of life changes there, right?
It's going to be such a big deal to be able to generate that power when you want. I think it's worth noting that this shield throw is an incredibly good attack now. It's 5 dice, ignoring cover, ignoring line of sight with a wild ricochet. And the extra dice not only pumps up your damage, but increases the chance of the ricochet, which then pumps up your damage on the second hit. So an extra dice on that attack goes a long way. So he is going to be like a serious contender for that range game, and he's going to be very good against certain characters, right? Like, he's going to be really good against X-Men Storm, Magneto with magnetic refraction, right? He's going to be very good in a lot of places.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm just going to throw it out there, right? The ricochet still generates a power, so he can generate 2 power off a single attack, which is just phenomenal for range 4. I think it's really good. And we will cover this more in depth. I feel like we're going to get more information about these things. We're just doing a mini extravaganza reaction here. We're not going to go super deep in it. We're at 35 mm-hmm. minutes already, and we haven't even talked about all this stuff. So, Hulk, a lot of changes. Where do we want to start here?
Okay, so we may not do a comprehensive list of changes, and I'm just going to do this from memory. This is going to be like a test. Okay, change number one from the top of his card. His defensive stats have changed. He went from 2-2-3, which was pretty lackluster, to 4-3-3. Two more physical defense and one more energy defense. So that is a huge change, right? Way better defenses. On top of that, his strike got massively better. It used to be 6 dice. Now it is 7 dice and generates power equal to damage. Huge. So that is a huge buff. And then he got a whole new superpower, Puny Banner, something like that, that lets him, as a reactive ability, reroll his defense dice. And then on top of that, the bonus damage he does from being hurt went down. So it used to be that he would get it for 3, so every 3 damage, you would get plus 1 dice on your attacks to a maximum of 6 dice when you've taken 18 or more damage. Now it's for every 4, so that is going to cap out at a realistic maximum of 4 dice when you've taken 16 damage. So that bit got nerfed, but what a small price to pay for massive defensive upgrades, great power generation increases, and a much better strike.
Him just being able to generate power with the strike to me is just a huge quality of life change. Ignoring the fact that his physical defense literally doubled, I think this is going to be great. I think it's going to be phenomenal. Jacob was already using Hulk pretty competitively, so I'm excited to see what he comes up with mm-hmm. here. I really like the changes for Bruce Banner. I love that it gets him back out on the table. He can compete with She-Hulk. He's such a phenomenal showcase model, right? When I was demoing this before COVID, people would always come and be like, oh, Hulk, really cool, smash. I'm like, yeah, he smashes things. Jeez, check this game out. Look, he throws stuff. just really, really cool.
Really cool. Oh, he's also immune to stun. That one more thing I forgot on the laundry list of changes.
That's actually a big quality huge deal for change him as well. I think, he had the second wind, right? Get sort of stunned, mm-hmm. but just not having to saddle into that tactic card is gigantic.
Yep. So he's going to just be way, way better, right? Harder to kill, better at generating power. I think, so playing with Hulk in the past, you could legitimately ignore him if you wanted to, right? Because his output, if you didn't attack him, his output was capped at 3 power generation. And his damage was capped, and it just became, okay, Hulk is probably going to gamma launch and punch me twice for 6 dice each. And that is acceptable for your 6 threat character. I will just ignore you. And then if you decided you couldn't ignore Hulk for any reason, like if, for example, he had a bunch of extracts and he needed to go down, then the answer became, okay, I'm going to burn you down. And you get a ton of extra damage. But if I can just time this right, so I can start attacking you after you've activated and just use every character I have, I can realistically expect that I can kill you. And then just kill your 6 threat character straight away. You don't have an injured side, so goodbye. And I think either of those strategies work just fine. And was the reason why Hulk was not very popular, is it was too easy to do either of them. And now, neither of them are going to be as easy, right? You can't ignore Hulk because he has much better power generation and a better strike. So he's going to start to be able to use his whole kit if you ignore him. And if you try to burn him down, he can start turning that extra power into better defense, and he can survive much longer.
Yeah, I think it's really powerful. Also, maybe in a future Sleeper to Heave It, try Lockjaw with Last Minute Saving Hulk. It's pretty freaking cool, let me tell you. So, Pat, do you have those foam guns in the UK, and they shoot darts at people?
Nerf guns.
Yeah, okay, so I don't like that word. I don't want to use that word. That's a word I've heard a lot in regards to MODOK and Shuri, and I would like to avoid it for the rest of this podcast if we could. Mm-hmm. I'm going to say they've been realigned.
Perfectly balanced.
Excellent, excellent. So Shuri is the simpler one. She basically had 2 changes, if I remember correctly. One was a timing cleanup for Super Genius. It just cleaned up and exactly said when you get the rerolls, right?
Yeah, for her upgrades power. And I am...
Oh, not for Super Genius. I'm sorry, for upgrades, yes.
Yeah, and I'm so happy about that because the same thing has been applied to MODOK. Presumably it would be applied to all characters who had this problem that was discovered several months ago. And let me tell you, like, playing against Wakanda since that rules change has been really annoying. It's one of my like pet peeves with MCP, and I'm so happy to see them address it and bring things back to the way they were.
And the other change is just she can only push characters size 3 or less. So she can't push super large characters around the board anymore, which makes sense. And again, just kind of the fact that she could always push anyone was a bit much, right? I mean, with the exception of characters that had a way to stop the push. Yeah. That was a horrible sentence. I shouldn't be podcasting. I just think it realigns her. I think she's still a very powerful character. For everyone that says they're never going to play her again, I don't understand. She's still an extremely powerful character. She can still push most of the characters in the game. Now, some of the times you are taking her to push a MODOK away or something like that, and that's not an option anymore. So will we see her less? Probably, but she's still a very good character.
Yeah, I think this is a change that is meaningful, but not actually that impactful in regards to how often you take her. Because, 95% of the game she can still push? So if you take her because you want her to push things, you're putting her in your roster, you're going to expect that your opponent's going to have some things she can push. And it might be that you have to consider carefully at deployment exactly where she goes, because you don't want to deploy her opposite Black Dwarf, right? But she's still going to be super relevant. And she's still going to be just as powerful, I think, in almost every situation. And actually, I'm quite happy about that, because I think as time has gone on, we've seen that Shuri is no longer the auto-include that she was considered to be like 12 months ago or 18 months ago, right? As more characters come into the game, she is naturally declining in how often she's taken. It's just as there's more competition. So I don't think she needed a big recalibration. I think this small change is plenty.
Next up is MODOK. I've never liked MODOK. I still don't like MODOK. But they've done some balancing changes to MODOK, and the big ones were there's a limitation to Battle of the Will of MODOK. This superpower can only be used once per turn, which is a gargantuan, borderline earth-shaking change here. And the other one is P-Brain, right? MODOK's genius is infinite. And that, again, can only be used once per turn. So look,
TT, very important question. Is his genius really infinite if he can only do it once a turn?
Well, it wasn't
infinite
before.
Isn't this a massive flavor fail?
He could only do it as much as he had power, right? That wasn't infinite, Pat.
Well, it was pretty close.
And that was the problem with MODOK, right? And I think that's a good thing to hit on. The issue that we had, and Pat and I both hit on this in episode, 12, which was 2 years ago, is that MODOK generated power really, really well and dumped it just as quickly.
Yes.
That was the issue with him. And now he's still extremely good at generating power. He is much better at dumping it out, because you can't just use P-Brain on every attack. So, it was not unusual to see four attacks with Doomsday Chair being thrown out there twice, and there's P-Brain re-rolling whatever you need to. That's slight hyperbole, especially when he was in Red Skull's affiliation, Cabal.
Yep.
And then Psionic Blast would generate you a ton of power, and you would just, I didn't kill him, I'm just going to bow the four characters away. Obviously, we've limited that. I think these are great changes to MODOK. It is interesting, you brought this up, and I disagreed with you, and you were right. MODOK has been taken less and less just because the game's gotten wider.
Yep.
And I do think that the knee-jerk meta reaction will be MODOK is unplayable, and we won't see MODOK for a little while, and then we'll start seeing him again.
Yeah, I don't think MODOK is unplayable. I think my hot take is MODOK is still in the conversation for the best 5 threat in the game after these changes.
Which I think clearly shows how crazy MODOK was before.
Yeah, right? I mean, he's got a 6 dice range 4 sap power builder, right? His damage is absurd, and his superpowers are all still great. Even if he could use them less, they're all great. So I don't mind. I still use them all.
He has good tactics cards.
Yeah. Yeah, he does.
So here's what I agree with you. I think he's still very playable, but I think people need to step away from him for a minute, because no one's going to want to play him right after all these things got taken away from him, or these things got changed, right? And I think we'll start to see him bubble up in another 3 to 6 months.
Yeah.
I think people need to step away, recover, go to counseling, feel better, and then they'll come back and play MODOK again.
Yeah, I actually think MODOK in some ways was suffering from the fact that he was rated so highly. I'm not going to say overrated by the community, because he was very good. But the fact he was rated so highly, he became in some ways a little bit of pariah, where people who were trying to experiment with cool stuff didn't want to take him, because it was like, oh yeah, sure, but you're just playing MODOK. And I keep remembering so many times when we're talking about synergies in episodes, I would mention MODOK and you would roll your eyes at me and be like, yeah, sure, MODOK. He has great synergy because he's the best. But actually, things like his base size, right, and his attack types and his weird defensive stat line have unique synergies in the game. And I think you'll see him take more now to use those synergies rather than just on pure power level.
I do think the... Yeah, I can definitely see what you're saying there. I think the other reason that people shied away from it is people... This is a bad behavior. People try not to do this. I try very hard not to do this, and I'm far from perfect, so I know I do it. People tend to try to take away other people's victories. But like, oh, you only won because you were playing MODOK. Oh, you only won because you rolled hot. Oh, you only won because crisis or random and you got this crisis. This is hyperbole, right? But it's a callback. And just don't do that. Just allow, you know, the person played well. They beat you. Just, you know, give them credit for that. You know, I've seen plenty of people use MODOK and still lose. It's not like putting MODOK on the table is an auto win, but I do know that there was some, like, again, just like a negative vibe kind of circling around if you dropped him on the table sometimes.
There's one, I think that's a great point and a good thing to keep in mind. There's one more point I wanted to hit on with these changes, which is a point for us all to remember and to be aware of when we're assessing them, which is changes don't happen in a vacuum, right? All of these things are happening at the same time and they interact with each other, right? They like context is really important for things like character power. So for example, a completely random crisis might be more impactful on MODOK, who's one of the characters who is more sensitive to the secure layout, right? He is really bad on a lot of D secures. And so if you have less control, like he is great at Gamma Wave and he's great at Demons, but if you can only play those, if you have both of those in your roster, you're still not playing them every time like you were in the past. So that kind of contextual change can also impact the value of characters. And also other characters are changing. So for example, Shuri now pushes size 3. That is a buff to MODOK and Hulk, right? Two characters who we've just talked about. So like, for example, a year ago, when Shuri and MODOK were all the rage of taking every roster, their duel was legendary, right? You would take Shuri so you could push MODOK. And you would stagger him every turn. And then at some point, MODOK would find a way to get in range of Shuri and kill her. And this was like a repeating game pattern. Well, these two changes, like, they impact that, right? And if you're, like, actually, if I could go back to that time in the past and both those changes happened, I might speculate that MODOK was buffed, not nerfed. Because Shuri was the way to counter MODOK, and she doesn't counter MODOK anymore. But that's kind of like, I know you're looking at me now like, are you crazy? But if you just imagine a game of MCP where those two characters are taken every roster.
I get what you're saying. I don't know. Bowing 3 to 4 characters is so bad. As Bow is
okay. Probably not a buff. But at least...
The thing I'll say, though, Pat, is like what I'm saying? You and other people got good at mitigating that, right? You always backstop MODOK. Yeah. You had another characters. You brought tugboats, basically, and it's bumpered. I get what you're saying. In a vacuum, the change to Shuri is a positive influence to MODOK. Because back in the day, it was just like, I took Shuri to mitigate MODOK, or I took MODOK, or I took Shuri and MODOK, which was extremely common as well, right?
Of course.
Shuri, MODOK, yeah. Zemo, Red Skull, right? Gamma, let's go.
Yeah. Wakanda plus MODOK, yeah. All the good stuff. But in any case...
I love good stuff is the right word there, Pat.
Nostalgia aside for the good old days of MCP. It's really important to remember that all of this stuff has context. And seeing any one individual piece, you're not going to know the whole picture. You're going to have to play with all of the rules changes together, all of the character changes together, and then you're going to know how things really shake out.
Yeah, I think that's a good thing to keep in mind. And we've talked about it and said it directly. These are just our reactions to these things. We need to see what they settle into the community. We have been wrong a lot, but we appreciate you still listening to us. And that's one of the great things about MCP. If we knew everything, the game would be boring. One of the great things in how wide it gets is there's all sorts of cool interactions that kind of come out of the woodwork every time these new characters come out. And we just got a bunch of changes, a bunch of new characters, and we're going to see a new meta kind of settle into the game. And I think both of us are excited to see what that is. So, Mini Extravaganza was phenomenal. We're excited for it. These changes will go live sometime before the end of the year. I believe Will Schick said that. So we're excited for things to come. Let us know what you thought about Mini Extravaganza. You can get at Pat on social media. Across the Bifrost has like a Facebook page, I think. And then Patreons, obviously, you can contact us on Discord. Patreon, stay tuned for the after the credit scene. We're going to be diving in and talking about Mystic Wakandan Herb. If you're interested in becoming a patron, you can check that out at patreon.com/acrossthebifrost. Patrons get a weekly bonus episode. It's about 15, 20 minutes, and we kind of dive into some deeper stuff. We released our spider-infected episode to the public. If you haven't checked that out, you can find that in acrossthebifrost.com or Spotify, iTunes, or wherever else you get your podcasts. We do want to sincerely thank each and every one of you for listening. Please let us know what you're excited about for Mini Extravaganza. Until next time, everyone, cheers and happy gaming.
Somewhere across the Bifrost, way up high, there's a that I've heard of once in a lullaby. Somewhere across the Bifrost, skies are blue, and the dreams that you dare to dream really do come true.